Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. We have four appeals to hear this morning. Judge Lagoa and I are very pleased to welcome our colleague from the Middle District of Florida, Judge Harvey Schlesinger, to assist us with our work today and tomorrow. Judge Schlesinger is a senior district judge. And as I said yesterday and the day before, when Judge Watkins from the Middle District of Alabama sat with us, we very much appreciate the assistance of our senior judges. The federal judiciary really couldn't function without them. They work for free. They're entitled to receive their retirement pay without doing any work. So the work they do for us is out of their shared devotion to the Constitution and our judicial duty. And they shoulder about 20% of the workload of the federal judiciary. They're a great bargain for the American people. And we're very appreciative. We're very grateful that Judge Schlesinger is going to assist us this week. So we have the first case to hear this morning is it Bullion, Mr. Smith?
Yes, Your Honor.
Bullion versus PNC. Counsel, we know about your cases. We've read your briefs, the authority cited in your briefs. You have limited time this morning. You should feel free to get to the heart of your argument. We're probably going to have some questions this morning, but be mindful of the clock and respectful of our time. When the clock expires, it's time for you to wrap it up and not just wait for me to tell you to wrap it up. On the other hand, if you're answering a question from the court, please feel free to finish your answer. If you have rebuttal time, you won't lose it if you're just answering a question from the court. With those ground rules in mind, Mr. Smith, will you speak with us, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Ian Smith, and I am counsel for appellate Rafiqul Bullion. This case asks this court to examine how it analyzes discrimination and retaliation claims based on religion. And it asks this court to revisit what constitutes an adverse employment action when an employer fails to reasonably accommodate an employee's religious beliefs. We believe there are three issues before this court. First, whether forcing an employee to make the cruel choice of choosing between his religion and his job is itself an adverse employment action under Title VII.
Does our recent decision in Bailey affect your argument?
Your Honor, I would say that the Bailey case is clearly distinguishable here. In Bailey, while the court is reviewing a failure to accommodate case. In Bailey, the court held that the employer granted the reasonable accommodation. In this case, Mr. Bullion's case, the reasonable accommodation for Mr. Bullion's religion was not granted, and Mr. Bullion was required to make a choice between the reasonable accommodation and the and his job.
I guess the problem I had with this as I was looking at this case was whether your client had really made a record that his faith really required him to take one course of action that the employer refused to accommodate. It's one thing to say, I would like to have a day off to observe a religious day, But it's another thing to say that my faith would not permit me to work on that day. And I'm not sure that we have a record that supports that there was that kind of choice.
Well, Your Honor, thank you. I believe the record demonstrates that Mr. Bouillon advised his employer of his religious beliefs, of his request to take, I believe you're referring to the second day of July 28, 2014, where he requested the day off for the in celebration of the El Al-Fatir celebration. The record, we believe, Your Honor, shows that he did communicate this, and it's simply a matter of the employer making judgments about the manner in which he communicated this. He described this as a celebration that is similar to Christmas in the Christian faith. Whether he it appears that the employer was taking and making its own interpretation on what on the sincerity of Mr. Bouillon's
beliefs. I mean, he worked, right? He ended up working that day, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And he never communicated to his employer that his religion would forbid him from working that day, did he? He would like to have the day off. You know, I'm Catholic. I might want to have the feast of the Ascension off. But my faith doesn't say I can't work that day. Wasn't he obligated to show that there was a clear conflict between his faith and what his employer was requiring? And if he went to work and never communicated that his faith prohibited him from going to work, how can we say there was that kind of clear conflict?
Well, Your Honor, it's not, whether he, under Title VII, Your Honor, he's required to communicate that he is requesting the reasonable accommodation based on his religious beliefs, and whether communicating that it's not necessary for him to demonstrate that his religion forbade him from taking the day off. It's this cruel choice, Your Honor, that we're arguing that the requirement of being forced to take this cruel choice that it in and of itself.
Counsel, may I ask you a question regarding the cruel choice argument that you make? Is there any case law out there that establishes that a cruel choice establishes an adverse action requirement?
Your Honor, we found no case law that uses this term cruel choice, but this is not a concept that's even unfamiliar in before this court. We provided supplemental authority regarding a 1975 case of Young versus Southwestern Savings and Loan Association, where the court found in that case, where this court found that an employee who would refuse to attend a prayer breakfast, an employee who was an atheist, that employee being required to take to attend that prayer breakfast, that constituted a constructive discharge when that employee resigned. But so this court has held and introduced a rule back in 1975 where the mere choice, the requirement of ignore or to choose between one's religious beliefs, that in and of itself is an adverse employment action.
Secondly, may I go and talk about, since your time is getting short, about the retaliation claim. What evidence do you have in the record that provides an inference that the decision makers who were included in the decision to terminate Mr. Bouyem had any religious animus toward him?
Your Honor, the record is filled with instances of where Mr. Bouyem complained about comments and other negative comments about his faith other comments about his faith. He brought these, he made these complaints to the management at PNC Bank. There are numerous facts in the record where Mr. Bouyem is complaining that specific individuals made comments.
None of that was from the decision makers that decided to terminate him.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, that's correct. That was not that these statements that weren't attributed to the decision makers, but it's clear that the decision makers were aware of the complaints that Mr. Bouyem had made. And in making these decisions, the decision makers were aware of Mr. Bouyem's of the complaints previously.
Let me ask you just one other thing. Didn't Mrs. May testify that when she asked her client whether having that day off was a religious requirement, he said no, it wasn't?
I'm not sure if that is. Completely the way the record reflects. Mr. Bouyem may not have used those terms, but it was clear that this was a part of the religious practices in his faith. Mr. Bouyem had been reasonably accommodated for this in years past, and PNC Bank had offered him this accommodation previously. So it's not clear that those specific terms were used, Your Honor. I see that my time is just about to expire.
Judge Schlesinger, do you feel he answered your question sufficiently?
Yes, that's fine, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hill.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Stan Hill, and I'm representing Appellee PNC Bank. PNC Bank holds money and provides financial services for its customers. And naturally, honesty and safety are very important at PNC Bank and are reflected in the code of ethics and the fidelity bonding requirements. And the enforcement of those principles is what brings us here today on Mr. Bouyem's termination. I would like to address, though, first the accommodation claim, which the panel had asked some questions about, and specifically refer to the Bailey case, which the 11th Circuit issued earlier this year, reconciling the Abercrombie decision of the Supreme Court with the prima facie elements of a religious accommodation claim. And in doing so, reaffirmed two bedrock principles that are fatal to Mr. Bouyem's claim here. The first of which being that there must be a conflict between the religious belief and the employment requirement, which is not met here on the July 28th day. For the Eid festival. Notably, Eid begins at sundown after bankers' hours end, and Mr. Bouyem admitted in his deposition that he was able to celebrate the holiday with his family after work. His original request by email stated that it was a personal day and a holiday celebration similar to Christmas, and that is subject to one and only one plausible interpretation, that he was looking for, exactly as he said, a personal day, not a religious day. Many people work on Christmas, though they are Christians, and celebrate the holiday, but that does not preclude them from working on that day. And similarly, with Mr. Bouyem's case, the Eid holiday, he was able to celebrate it and work on that day, so there is no conflict. There's also no adverse employment action, and the 11th Circuit in the Bailey case reaffirmed that adverse employment action is an essential element of the prima facie case for a Title VII religious accommodation claim. That is not met here, either for the July 28th day or the July 25th day, the prior Friday.
So are you conceding that there was a conflict on the 25th?
Well, Mr. Bouillon was accommodated with other Fridays off in that month, though his request for those Fridays off was made after the schedule was finalized. His request was honored and efforts were made to accommodate him on those Fridays for religious purposes so that he could have the prayer that he wanted. And as Mr. Smith referred to historically, yes, Mr. Bouillon did have Fridays and Ramadan off, but yet every year it was still incumbent upon him to inform his employer timely and through the appropriate channels of his need for accommodation. And here in July 2014, he did not do so. He waited until after the schedule was finalized to communicate his request for Fridays off to a supervisor. And yet PNC made good faith efforts to accommodate him and in fact did accommodate him. July 4th was a federal holiday and a banking holiday, so that was not no time off was needed. But on July 11th, he was given the time off. And on July 18th, in fact, the schedules were rearranged such that he would be able to take the time off. And then on July 25th, coworkers had pre-approved vacations. Another coworker had a medical appointment for their child, and it was very important. And those requests do not cede under Hardison or under any of the circuit precedent to Mr. Bouillon's request. And the company did what it could to try to accommodate Mr. Bouillon. And in the end of the day, there wasn't enough coverage for the branch. And as a result, if you were only to have two employees there, as Ms. Graves testified, and it's undisputed in the record, that is a safety concern. And naturally with money and other assets at a bank branch, staffing for safety is important. And that does satisfy the undue hardship standard under the analogous circuit precedents, which are cited in our brief and include Beadle case, Beadle v. City of Tampa, where scheduling for police officers was found to be an undue hardship under analogous circumstances. As to the cruel choice argument, I would say first, the circuit precedent has required for a long time and even all the way up to the Bailey case, an adverse employment action. And what is an adverse employment action? It's analyzed through an objective lens, and it must be so. The cruel choice that appellant refers to is inherently subjective and undefinable. What is a cruel choice? Though there may be a conflict, what makes a choice cruel? These are standards that are inherently subjective and do not align with the precedent that an adverse employment action must be objectively defined, number one, but also a serious and material change in the terms and conditions of employment. That is reiterated in the Dixon v. Palm Beach case cited in our briefing, but also in other circuits that have addressed this issue, the Sixth Circuit cases cited in our briefing, and also going back to more bedrock cases that define the objective.
The question I had earlier was that it seemed to me that the fact that he showed up on July 25th would allow the inference that there wasn't a clear conflict. And I just wasn't sure that there was any evidence that there was a clear conflict.
Yeah, Your Honor, there is not evidence in the record of that. The company took Mr. Bouillon in his request at good faith, and whether or not it was religious or not, they made an effort to give him what he wanted. And the employer can't be penalized for that, especially given that several days off were provided. There was no threat to Mr. Bouillon's job. There was no ultimatum, show up or be fired.
So I guess your point is your client assumed that there was a clear conflict, and you've continued to assume there was. And your defense is we tried to accommodate.
As to July 25th, he was taken at his word and efforts to accommodate him were made. There was not a concession by the employer about a conflict, but rather that we will do what we can to accommodate him as they tried on July 28th. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, historically in the heat of the moment, what were they trying to do for Mr. Bouillon? They were trying to do right by him at every turn with his accommodation requests. Now, where we are legally, we look back at this, and you're right, Your Honor, there is nothing in the record to say that July 25th was a conflict. But nevertheless, even if it was, there was no adverse employment action. And certainly the case referred to by Mr. Smith from 1975, the Young versus Southwestern Savings case, 509 F second 140, that's a constructive discharge case. There, the Fifth Circuit wrote that it was obvious that there was a threat to the employee's job if the employee didn't come to the mandatory prayer meeting. Here, there is no threat. There is no constructive discharge claim, moreover, or allegation of constructive discharge anywhere in the briefing. And so that case we would submit is not applicable, and the principles of the case don't.
Mr. Hill, I'd like to ask you like a hypothetical. So let's assume that Mr. Bouillon had refused to show up for work on the day, I can't remember if it was July 28th. And as a result of that, he was then disciplined. Is that sufficient then to show an adverse employment action if he refused to show up? I'm sort of confused as to, did the bank believe that he had a sincere belief that this was a religious accommodation request, or does he have to not show up in order for there to be an adverse employment action?
So factually in the record, it was the bank that raised the question first about, is this religious? This is not a situation where the bank was oblivious or ignorant or willfully ignorant or blind to the circumstances. They were asking Mr. Bouillon for more information. And his response was something to the effect of, it's like Christmas, and that's all he said. And so they were trying to make an effort to accommodate him, whether or not it was based in religion. And there was never any decision made or anything in the record to suggest that Mr. Bouillon's job was in jeopardy, whether or not he showed up on the 28th. He was simply told that his request for the time off was denied. And in order to assess your question directly, discipline, we do need to know more about the hypothetical in order to come to a determination, because discipline in the abstract is not dispositive, whether it's a serious and material change in the terms of employment. There are some cases that do refer to discipline in a general sense as being something that could satisfy the prima facie case. But at the end of the day, what is discipline? Is it a verbal reprimand? That would not satisfy the objective standard of serious and material change. Were it to result in a termination, that's a different story. And that's akin to the Abercrombie case when you're talking about a failure to hire in the first instance. There's termination and failure to hire are clearly adverse employment actions. That didn't happen here as a result of anything having to do with Mr. Bouillon's accommodation.
Reduction in pay, that would be an example.
Yes, Your Honor. A reduction in pay, I think, would also satisfy. But again, nothing like that happened here. And the accommodation requests and how those were handled were through a completely separate channel and process than the investigations that led to Mr. Bouillon's termination. It's undisputed in the statements of undisputed material facts on the summary judgment briefing that the recommendation for termination arose out of the investigations of Mr. Bouillon's false referrals and Mr. Bouillon's false statements made in the context of investigating his claims against Ms. May and his conduct in that interview that occurred. There were two interviews that happened on the same day. The first to address his concerns about Ms. May and the second to address the concerns raised about his false referral. It can't be understated the importance of honesty and integrity in the banking industry and for PNC Bank, especially given the fidelity bonding requirements that are in place and PNC's code of ethics. It was in our briefs, but I feel compelled to note it, that in 2013 and 2014, and that was the year Mr. Bouillon was terminated, all 38 PNC employees in Alabama and Georgia who were found to have been dishonest were terminated, just like Mr. Bouillon. And 8 of those 38 were found to have manipulated the sales incentive system, just like Mr. Bouillon. He said in his deposition he was, quote, very aggressive with referrals, but he crossed the line. He was found to have crossed the line. He admitted that his conversation with the customer did not align with the documentation he put into the referral system. And $3 for that. He got a financial reward for that. And to allow an employee to put in false information and get money in return, that cannot be tolerated. Lawfully, it need not be tolerated. And Mr. Bouillon was terminated for that reason and for his other false statements that were documented in the investigations. There was a reference to the retaliation claim. I would say that, again, we have all the legitimate non-discriminatory, non-retaliatory reasons for that. And further, that as to protected activity and causation, there are the only protected complaints that Mr. Bouillon made concerned Ms. Best and statements that she allegedly made, which were far more than 3 months removed from his termination. And so the causal connection element of the prima facie case fails there as well. The complaints he made against Ms. May don't refer to anything of improper animus or bias, and neither of the decision makers, Ms. Graves or Ms. Parker, were shown to have any suggestion of bias or animus or retaliatory intent in anything that they did. The investigations, as I think you'll see from the record, were very well documented. The good faith basis, the good faith belief rule of Elrod v. Sears, which has been circuit law for over 30 years, would squarely control the conclusions that they drew from the investigation and resulted in Mr. Bouillon's termination. With that, Your Honors, if there are no further questions, I would be glad to give back a couple minutes of time and request that the entry of summary judgment be affirmed for PNC Bank.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. We'll always gladly take back time. Mr. Smith, you have 5 minutes. Mr. Smith, you're on mute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes.
Your Honor, again, the Bailey case, this court's earlier 2021 decision in Bailey, it's clearly distinguishable here.
What I'm mainly concerned about is what the test that it establishes, that it makes clear that the law requires, and whether we have a record that would create a genuine issue of material fact that you can satisfy that test.
Well, Your Honor, may I just say that this idea of the choice, the employee being forced to make a choice between his job and his religion, that the EEOC, Your Honor, in its 2021 compliance manual takes this position that the choice itself is an adverse action.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that we have the choice. You know, that was the reason for my questions earlier about Bailey saying that there has to be a conflict. I'm not sure whether we even really have a record of a conflict.
Well, there is, Your Honor, once Mr. Bouillon requested the reasonable accommodation and he is denied that reasonable accommodation.
He never tells his employer that his faith prohibits him from working that day.
Well, Your Honor, he informed his employer that his faith required, or that it was part of his religious beliefs that he would be taking, that he needed reasonable accommodation.
Well, what he said was that he would like to have that day off to observe a religious day. That's not putting your own employer on notice that your faith would not allow you to work that day. Those are two different things, it seems to me.
Your Honor, the Supreme Court in the Abercrombie case shows that this knowledge requirement wasn't necessary. Again, Your Honor, with respect to this cruel choice, I think it's important for the court to understand that other circuits have taken up this issue and looked at it. The Third Circuit in the Story versus Burns International case, and the Ninth Circuit, as well as a court in the Seventh Circuit, has viewed this. And it's our argument, Your Honor, that this does change the material when an employee is forced to work or to choose the reasonable. When an employee is denied the reasonable accommodation and is forced to work over his religious beliefs, that does materially impact the terms and conditions of that employee's employment.
Well, can I ask you a question, Mr. Smith? And I think it's over your time, but the question I have is, my understanding of the religious holiday at question here is that it occurs after sundown, and your client was able to celebrate the religious holiday after the workday terminated with his family. So what more does an employer need to do? I mean, does he, that's where I'm having an issue.
I think you're referring to the second, there are two separate requests, the 28th or and the 25th. But to say, Your Honor, that he had, with respect to the 28th, if that's your question.
Yes.
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that the employer was being subjected to an undue burden.
Well, is that true? Because I thought that on the 28th, they already had two requests that had been put in and approved. And as a result of it, they would have had an undue burden because they would have been understaffed.
Well, that's the testimony of the regional manager, Graves, but there's not...
That's the evidence in the record. I mean, that's what the evidence shows. Do you have anything to disprove that record?
Well, Your Honor, we don't have anything to disprove the testimony that was in fact the testimony of Ms. Graves. But Your Honor, it's in the record that there was no reviewing of schedules. There's no, I see that my time is expired.
You can finish your answer.
Your Honor, there's nothing in, when I say there's, setting aside Ms. Graves' testimony, what I'm saying is that the company came forward with no real evidence of undue burden.
We can't set aside testimony, Mr. Smith. I mean, you have a burden of presenting competing evidence that creates a genuine issue of material fact, but we don't set aside testimony that's undisputed.
Your Honor, I would refer you to our briefing on this subject further. Okay. And we'd ask that the court reverse the district court here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.